meeting of House Labor and Commerce. This is the 13th of February. Committee members present are Representative Crawford, Representative Halcrow, Representative Hayes, Representative Meyer, and myself, Representative Murkowski. We have just one bill to come before the committee today. That's House Bill 258, which is a change in the business license fee to receipts tax, otherwise known as the gross receipts tax. And we did have the sunset bill for the Regulatory Commission also scheduled for today, but I did announce earlier that we will not be taking that up today. It is going to take a full committee day, and I'm not quite certain how long we're going to have to go today. We're just now getting the names in from individuals that are calling in from various sites around the state, so we'll know how many individuals who would like to testify on 258. Before we take up 258, though, when last we met, we had taken up House Bill number 229, which is an act imposing a tax on employment and imposing an effective date, and it had been tabled. And it was certainly the intention of the chair that when we had pretty much full committee member presentation here, that we would hopefully be able to take this back up at this point in time. Representative Halcrow.
Madam Chair, I would move, if it's an appropriate motion, I'd move CS for House Bill number 229. We offer amendments? We did make amendments.
No, we just need to bring it back up on the table.
If we could bring it back up at this time for committee discussion.
Seeing no objection, we have House Bill 229 before us again, and we did not, there were no amendments that the committee made at the last hearing. Representative Halcrow?
Madam Chair, I would move CS for House Bill number 229 from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal note.
And this does go on to finance after this. Is there objection?
Madam Chair, I object just for the purposes of discussion. Did you want a full committee here to take a vote on that bill? If so, then we should probably wait for...
Well, we can wait on it. I don't particularly think that we need to. My intent, and I think I stated it pretty clearly on Monday, was to get those elements that might be considered, even considered to be part of a fiscal plan and part of a revenue package, to get those measures up to House Finance with as much expediency as we could. And the testimony that we took on Monday, I thought was good and relatively extensive. There were some, two of our committee members that had a meeting elsewhere, and we did get full input and discussion from the two members that are absent, so I'm not too concerned that we don't have the entire committee here before us. But Representative Meyer, if you want to wait until they do come up, we can certainly do that. I just didn't want to interrupt the testimony on Representative Scalzi's bill, so that was my only reason in asking it to be brought forward now.
No objection, just for the record, this was the $100 education tax.
Correct.
I'll keep my opposition.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Seeing that, can we have a roll call vote, please? Representative Meyer.
And it seems like we had some amendments too that were made with about the age, lowering it from 19 to 18, and.
We did actually have amendments, Madam Chair. We changed the payment schedule to quarterly with ESC tax. We also made the effective date with the passage of a personal income tax, or not before 2003 of January.
And I stand corrected. I was reading your note that says requested as is, and what we have is the amendments that were made by the committee on Monday. So this is a corrected draft. I was reading her notes and saying that we hadn't amended. You're absolutely right, Representative Meyer.
Well, and then I guess the only other question I have is for the two members who work here, if they're comfortable with the amendments we made, or if we do need more discussion. But if they don't, I'm fine.
I'm comfortable with it.
I'm comfortable.
I tried to sign on to it.
Wouldn't let you, would we? Do you still maintain your objection?
I do.
Okay, if we can have a roll call vote, please. Representative Halker.
Just a question. I'm not quite sure. You're objecting to moving the bill from committee?
That's
just to, okay.
So on that, to move it from committee.
Representative Hayes?
Yes.
Representative Halker?
Yes.
Representative Meyer?
Nope.
Representative Crawford?
Yes.
Chairman Murkowski?
Yes.
Four yeas, one nay.
Yes, I started.
Oh, you did. Okay. I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. Okay, and so the measure does pass. We will move CS for House Bill number 229 from committee as amended with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note. Thank you. Got that out of the way. And next, let's move to the bill of the day, 258. Representative Scalzi, I don't think we've gotten as much incoming mail on any piece of legislation that we've taken up as we have on 258. And in fact, my fax machine burned up receiving all of the faxes. And if the intent of the sponsor was to generate public comment and feedback, you've sure done it, in my opinion. And I will note for the record that it is Representative Scalzi's 50th birthday today. So he gets as many cookies as he would like. And that also means that we don't beat up the sponsor of the bill, no matter how much we might not particularly care for the contents of the bill. We're not gonna kill the messenger, I think is the saying, but with that introduction,
yeah,
and knowing what you have in front of you, I would like you to present your testimony, and then if we could please hear from the department as to the mechanics of the tax and how it would work so that the public understands that, and then we will move directly into the public testimony after that.
Okay.
So Representative Scalzi, welcome and happy birthday.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
And Representative Roper has joined the committee.
I appreciate the introduction on the floor today of the most hated bill we will hear today. That was pretty good. And so anyone doesn't waste the ammunition, I have full Kevlar outfit on it. I mean, but first of all, there's House Bill 258 and House Bill 258 CS. The committee substitute is closer to what was originally on the Alaska books back from 1949 to 1979. It was repealed at that time, at the same time that the income tax was repealed. Those were the two revenue generators that the state had at that time. It was substantially different in that the tax collected at that time was 0.5% up to $100,000, and then it dropped down to 0.25% over $100,000. Just for sake of consistency, I left it at 2%, but in the committee substitute, and maybe, Madam Chairman, I don't know if you want to have a motion to move the substitute so I could speak to it directly.
Representative Halper?
Madam Chair, I'd move the committee adopt the CS for House Bill 258 as our working document.
And that is /L. Kurtz. Seeing no objection, we have that before us as our working document.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this bill changes a little bit from the one you saw briefly last spring. It would have a floor of $20,000 so that there would be no taxes collected on any small businesses, household businesses, that generated less than $20,000. From $20,000 to $100,000, there would be a gross receipts tax of 2%. Anything over $100,000 would have a collection of 1%. Now, I also separated out, or excuse me, I eliminated the separating out of ticket items over $2,000. In the original bill last spring, we talked about having the big ticket items over $2,000 were exempt. That appeared to be also a accounting nightmare. So this would just tax everything. It also, the difference between a gross receipts tax and a regular sales tax is that there are specific exemptions that are allowed for in the collection of the tax, but in the spending of an item. In other words, if somebody was at a church bookstore, they certainly would be exempt from the gross receipts tax. But if a preacher or somebody involved with the church would go to the store at Smyrna and get a buy some lumber for the church, that would not be exempt. They would not have a exemption card for purchases. They would for sales, but not for purchases. And the intent of this is to give the committee an opportunity to view a tax that could be collected statewide on sales with little, I guess for better lack of better words, little encumbered problems that you have on a sales tax on the register. When we go from borough to borough and city to city, we have problems with different exemptions in each taxing district. We have caps in different taxing districts. As an example, I think Juneau has a $2,000 tax cap for items. Kenai Peninsula Borough has a $500. There was the issue of, well, we should have a different sales tax credit for municipalities that already have sales taxes. So that would eliminate the argument that if you are going to add a state income tax on the register, then you need to exempt those communities that are already collecting it. Well, there's a tremendous fairness issue there that I don't think is valid. I think the fairness issue is valid. For instance, if Anchorage were to impose a 2% sales tax on them, but yet we eliminated the city of Soldotna because they already have a sales tax, well, that would not be fair. I mean, people in each area would not be paying their fair share to the state. So a gross sales receipt tax, where the incorporation of the tax is in the price of the product, would be able to administer a statewide sales tax throughout and not have any problem with the exemptions or caps or fairness issues that you would have on some of the problems that are inherent in a regular 2% sales tax. Madam Chairman, I'll say for the record also, and those listening, I have no penchant for passing any of these tax measures, but being a part of the Fiscal Policy Council for the last year, Fiscal Policy Caucus that you and other members here have been involved with, it's difficult to come up with concepts and have the public speak to concepts. And because of that problem, I found it inherent that we weren't getting the dialogue from the public that we should have. So this tax bill, as the other one I introduced, I believe it was House Bill 233, which is a regular 2% sales tax, are out there as vehicles for the public to make their comment, for this committee to consider, and find out if there's anything here that's worth moving forward. It was intriguing to me because it was on the books before. It's intriguing to me because it takes care of those issues that I've stated, and I think it should be on the table for discussion. I certainly have had some input from other constituents, as you have, that it is a value-added tax. Essentially, every facet of sales gets taxed, so it's a multiple tax. It's not just a retail tax. We have to be cognizant of that. If this committee chose to do that or make it just retail, or if they chose to make it a net receipts tax versus a gross receipt tax, that could be considered. Again, this is just a vehicle, and I offer it for consideration.
Thank you, Representative Scalzi. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My biggest fear about this would be the fact that you could tax a person's sales before there were any profits. It seems to me that you could drive businesses right out of the business if you tax before we ascertain whether there was going to be a profit at all.
That's a good argument. I think, as I stated, the intent is that you incorporate the price, the tax, into the price of the product. So similar to, I try and take that argument away. If I'm selling these signs here for $2 a piece, and I put the 2 cents on the register, I don't see any difference in knowing what my margin is and incorporating the 2 cents into the price of the product and being responsible and collecting that tax throughout the year for the state of Alaska. So instead of selling this for $2 and a 2 cent tax at the register, I would sell it for $2.04, and I would hold that part of my gross receipts, part of my gross, as a tax that I would owe the state of Alaska. And I know that you're going to hear argument I've heard arguments from stores that say they operate on a very slim margin as it is, and they don't have the room to put that added value in there. That it could be a valid argument, but putting a 2% sales tax on top of any product is going to end up with the same results. So it's for you to consider, for all of us to consider. But we've got two people from the Department of Revenue here, Neil Slotnick and Brett Freed, to speak to some of the intricacies of the tax and the collection. So.
Thank you. Representative Cott has joined us. Representative Halcott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me follow up on what the example that you just gave with regards to a $2 sign. The gross receipts tax, is the problem with the gross receipts tax is, as it points out here, basically puts business at the top of the pyramid. I mean, there's no way you can pass through a gross receipts tax, because if you sell this sign for $2, you pay a 2% gross receipts tax on $2. If you try and pass that to the customer and raise your sign to $2.04, you pay 2% on $2.04, not on $2.
That's correct.
So I just wanted to clarify that, because that's not, I mean, unlike a sales tax, you cannot pass that through to the consumer. I mean, that is something that is totally borne by business, and as Representative Crawford said, they're pre-tax earnings, so you don't know whether you've made any money or not.
That's partially correct. When you can pass the 4 cents on, which there's an inherent price that the business is going to pick up, and in this case it would be 0.04. So in other words, you're paying 2% on $2.04 rather than $2.02. But if you compute that out, it comes out to 0.04, which would be $40 on $100,000 worth of sales. That's what you can't collect. If you do the math, that's what it comes out to. So you're right that there is a percentage, and I say in this particular instance it would be 0.04, or $40 on $100,000 worth of gross that the business would have to absorb, but you still have the ability to collect that 2% on the gross. What you lose is you lose the compounded part, which is 0.04. I could write it out if I'm a little confusing, but that's the way I had to do it to understand it.
Well, let's listen to Department of Revenue and the mechanics and how the tax might be applied, and then we can get into the public testimony, because we do have a fair number of folks that have signed up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do you have room for both of you there, or how do you want to handle it?
I'm Neil Slotnick, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Revenue, and Brett Freed is with me here today, and he is our staff economist, and he has done the economic analysis of this bill. We did not have the CS when Brett did his work, but he does have some estimates of what the original bill would have raised and explained some of the difficulties with the bill. Just very briefly, gross receipts tax, Representative Scalzi explained it very well. It would not apply, however, to sales into the state made from afar. We would not be able to apply this gross receipts tax to internet sales, to catalog sales, any sales that didn't originate with a business that did business here in a license. It did your business here in this state. There, We have a fiscal note here for what we think the cost of collection would be. There are some features of this bill that are labor intensive. There's a security provision for non-resident licensees. Those security provisions, in our experience with similar ones for fish tax, do tend to be quite labor intensive because there's individual consideration involved as to the amount of real estate that they may be putting up, or if they can't put up real estate, then we have to tailor specific security to them. And there's also collection issues when there is a business failure. That's one other thing that concerns us here, is that the businesses will be holding the gross receipts for over a year before the return is due to be filed. If there's bankruptcies, difficulty in collection there, we think it's going to be fairly costly. Why don't I let Mr. Freed address the question of how much revenue this bill will raise.
Okay. For the record, my name is Fred Freed. I'm an economist at the Department of Revenue. And everybody has a copy of the fiscal note here. The reason why we didn't put the revenue amounts on the front page is they're very rough estimates. And that's because there is no data available, for instance, to address something like a cap so that you're not paying a tax on a single item that's the amount that's over $2,000, portion of the price is over $2,000. And there, we looked at it in terms of three different scenarios. One of the scenarios is that everything essentially is included in the revenue estimate, except for what's specifically excluded in the bill. And that would be that the 2% tax would raise $380 million. Some of you might have heard that an estimate that we've made that a sales tax at 1% with very few exemptions would raise $100 million. So why does this raise so much more? The reason is that it, whereas a sales tax, and when we're usually referring to sales tax, we're talking about sort of a traditional sales tax that is mostly targeted at retail and then includes some services. This would hit just about every sector in the economy. And one thing, so for instance, we give an example in here that we have under pyramiding, which would be that if a fisherman sold their fish to a manufacturer, the fisherman would pay on their gross receipts. Then the manufacturer, when they sold it to the wholesaler, would pay on their those gross receipts, which would include the tax that the fisherman paid. And then it would just go up the chain all the way, wholesaler through to retailer. But if you didn't include, if services, for instance, were not included in the tax, and transportation, refining, and wholesale sale of petroleum products were, you know, basically excluded because of the cap, then you would be talking more in terms of 2% at about $176 million. I don't really have anything else unless there are questions.
Other questions of either Mr. Freed or Mr. Skotnik? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For an example, if we were producing tubifores from Southeast Alaska, and we were competing against tubifores coming from the lower 48, wouldn't that make our products much, much less competitive?
Yeah, I mean, you would have to pay the gross receipts tax, and it would depend on whether, you know, if the other product, if they weren't paying tax, you know, your product would be, it'd be less, you wouldn't be as competitive as you would be if you didn't have to pay it on it.
And in addition, I think there's the tax on the business inputs. So to the extent that the manufacturing plant had to make certain purchases here in the state in which the 2% tax was then passed on, it would all be, you'd get that pyramiding effect, it's called, in economics, where you're paying on each of the business inputs.
Right.
Representative Halcroft.
And when that happens, at the end of the line, the consumer pays far more for the end product because it's been taxed on every level.
And it would depend on how far up the chain it is. I mean, some products, for instance, if that fish was sold directly to the consumer, then it would just be taxed once. Sure. But if that fish, you know, went through a manufacturing process, it was wholesaled, and then sold to retail, then it would have, you know, much more tax associated with that product.
Further questions by the gentleman? Representative Cott.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe you know the answer to this, maybe you don't, that's fine. But how many other states have a similar taxing scheme that we're discussing here?
State of Washington. I don't have a number for you. I can find that out.
Bruce, I think that in terms of the number of services, if services are included under this bill, other states that tax services as widely, I think you'd be looking at like Hawaii and New Mexico.
Do they have, it's a gross receipts tax?
It's essentially a gross receipts tax. In those.
So we're talking a very few number of states who have this kind of a scheme, and I would suspect if I did the research necessary that I would find out that their general state of their economy the last decade probably didn't show very much growth. If New Mexico is one of those, I know for a fact, having lived there, had friends back there. I'm just wondering what the net effect would be on the economy of the state who implemented, you know, this kind of a scheme.
That's hard to know. You know what obviously there would be economic effects.
And my final question to the gentleman is. Administration in support of this?
Well, the Department of Revenue very much appreciates working with Representative Scalzi, and he's a very good representative. We're not as fond of the bill, however.
So can I then suggest that was an unequivocal no, you're not supportive?
I would say we do not support this bill.
Thank you.
Representative Halcroft and then Meyer.
Thank you. Did we
that was very politically correct, by the way.
Very good. And on that note, did we get a couple of faxes from you guys?
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah. Speaking of faxes, I ran out of fax paper. I've had more here. And unfortunately, not too many are in support. Representative Scalzi did mention, though, that we used to have the gross receipts tax in place. Do you know why we got rid of it when we did, and when did we get rid of it? I don't recall.
It was repealed, I believe, in 1980.
With the state income tax?
Yes. I have a copy of it here. Repealed 1978, according to my notes.
And was there justification other than we just had a whole bunch of money that didn't need it anymore? Was it bad back then, and it's bad now? Or
I really don't know.
Level wealth.
I believe, from what I heard, Kevin was at the...
Representative Scalzi, can you come forward just a little bit, just so we can pick you up?
Oh, just that the issue was is that you need an income tax to verify the gross receipts of a business. So when the income tax was repealed, this was repealed along with it. That's my understanding of the history of that.
Mm-hmm. But Representative Scalzi, if I may.
Go ahead, Representative Meyer.
Income tax was repealed at that same time in 1978?
That's my belief, yeah.
Okay.
So around that same time frame.
Had something to do with finding Prudhoe Bay, I bet.
I think it had something to do with Prudhoe Bay.
Okay, very good.
Thank you. Any further questions of either gentleman? Appreciate your testimony and enlightening us. Okay, this time we will go to public testimony. We have several sites across the state and quite a handful of folks that have signed up to testify. So in the interest of time so that we can get
to all of those people online, I would ask you to keep your comments to no more than 3 minutes. And if you can give constructive reasons as to why you don't like it, I'm anticipating that we're probably going to hear more that are saying that they don't like it. Constructive reasons as to why it doesn't work for your business, that's certainly more instructive to us than just I hate it. So with those words of guidance, let's first go to Homer first. Let's go to the good representative's hometown, Emmett Trimble.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chairman, this is Emmett Trimble.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm here representing the Kachemak Bay Board of Realtors. Board of Directors met yesterday, had unanimous opposition to the bill as drafted, and that was the committee substitute, and are passed a resolution that they'll be forwarding in opposition to the bill. Some of the concerns are that there's an assumption that you can pass along these costs into your price structure and charge more, and maybe some businesses can do that. Most businesses can't easily do that. If the state wants the money, and it's going to be really a sales tax, let's call it a sales tax, and that has no effect on the impression that the consumer has about the business raising their prices. Obviously, the disadvantages of the pyramiding are there. Well, we face that, though, in a sales tax as well, really. I see it as being discriminatory against the smaller businesses with receipts, gross receipts under $100,000. Versus larger, for example, a retail store in Homer versus a big box store up in King Iseldon or Anchorage. Majority of their sales, they would be paying 1%. Majority of the sales, small business that really is the backbone of the economy, is paying 1%. Speaking to a point that was raised earlier regarding profitability and having a tax based on gross receipts, many businesses, and all of us have probably had to do with starting a business, and sometimes it's 3-4 years before a business is profitable. And so a 2% tax on gross receipts is really devastating to a business that's just starting out. I'll direct my own personal comments to Drew next time I talk to him. Happy birthday, Drew.
Thank you, Mr. Trimble. Next, let's go to Mr. Ken Wardwell, also in Homer.
Yes, hello. My name is Ken Wardwell. I sell real estate in Homer. I'm a licensed salesman as an independent broker, and I'm speaking in opposition to House Bill 258. I'm opposed for a number of different reasons, but it seems like the value-added aspects, the negative aspects of creating any value-added product in the state, it seems like the multiple taxation of the dollars created by increased value on a product that we're trying to build in the state of Alaska, that it makes us non-competitive with any products that we were getting from outside. It would also seem that most people would, there would be a flight to try to buy all of your goods and product from outside of the state by on the website and email, which is already happening to a great degree in any case, but we really don't need to put ourselves in a unfavorable competitive position relative to our competitors outside of this area. So I would speak in opposition to this bill. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Wardwell. And that's all we have in Homer. Let's next go to the MATSU LIO, Mike Lohman. Mr. Lohman?
Thank you, committee members. I'm very appreciative of some of the comments made by people on the committee there. I think they're very astute of what's going on. I represent M. Lohman Investments, Inc., and own a commercial building rental business. I'm adamantly opposed to House Bill 258. or any other form of gross receipts tax against businesses. I talked to many other business owners who could not make it here today, but they could not believe that anyone would propose such a tax. Most thought it must be a state sales tax until they realized that it meant taxing your basic net income. You know, 1 to 2% doesn't sound like much until you convert it to your net. It's extremely discriminatory tax, being that one, only business owners pay it, and two, the less your operating margin is, the greater your percentage of tax paid on your net. As one of the individuals pointed out, if you didn't make any money, essentially you're still going to pay a tax. Some business owners work on profit margins of 8% before federal taxes. This tax would cost that owner 24% of his net for businesses up to $100,000 and 12% for those over $100,000. How would you like your paycheck reduced by 24%? This tax is one of the best ways to put Alaska's economy into a tailspin and should be easily recognized by anyone with any business sense. When businesses have no way of passing increased costs onto the consumer, many businesses will go out of business. A lot of businesses have to compete with the lower 48, such as now we have the internet and catalog sales. What's going to happen when we increase our costs in Alaska? When businesses close, jobs are lost and unemployment increases. Who pays for unemployment? Only those who still work. Wouldn't it make more sense to stimulate economy rather than stifle it? Anyone voting in favor of this bill doesn't care about Alaska or its economy. Maybe you should pass a bill requiring anyone proposing a tax in Alaska complete a course in economics and pass successfully. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Mr. Lohman. Next, let's go to Gary Weber. Mr. Weber?
Madam Chairman, my name is Gary Weber. I'm a business person here in Monticello, Alaska. I went into business in 1976, back when we did have the gross revenue tax. We called it a grossly unfair tax back then. I paid it for 3 years. Each year I paid it, I had to go to the bank and borrow the money, because I was a new business, just like the gentleman at Homer mentioned. When you're starting out new, you got some real struggles for the first 5 years. And of my $11,000 net profit, I was paying $5,500 out in the state revenue tax, which was 50% of my net profit. Now, 22 years later, I'm doing a gross of $5,600,000 versus my $2,100,000 back in 79. The gross revenue tax will take 64% of my net profit. I'm working on a 1.6 profit margin. And I'm not ready to start paying out 64% of my profit, which will keep me from doing any capital improvements, replacing any capital projects, and just make it impossible to even do any major maintenance in my business. It's an unfair tax, and I adamantly oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. Appreciate you coming out today. Let's go to Petersburg next. Rocky Flint.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Most of what I have to say here has already been covered pretty well, and sounds like fairly vehemently, but a couple items that I think would be of interest. In particular,
did we lose him?
I think so.
He's getting to the interesting part.
Just lost him.
Is anybody on in Petersburg?
No, the whole site just dropped off.
Okay, well, when they get back on, let me know and we'll get them back into the loop here. While we're waiting for Petersburg to come back on, let's go to Anchorage. Mr. James Morgan.
Yes, this is Jim Morgan. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, thanks for this opportunity to testify. I am against House Bill 258, just like everybody else says, and like the gentleman from Petersburg says, a lot of what I have to say has already been said, but it is definitely an unfair attack because there is no consideration of the profit picture. It's definitely a backdoor sales tax. It's actually explained by the bill itself. I believe if we have to have any taxes, the sales tax would be the way to go. So then it gets not just because they very easily could, business could not make any profit and still have to pay the tax. So, to answer to about the competition, you may not be able to pass that on to the consumer because it's just in competition itself. You may want to put that 2% on there, but then you see your people going to your cost competitors, so you drop your price, and the business ends up eating that sales tax. So I think it's very unnecessary and very unfair to the business. And everybody that I knew, back, I went in business in 1979, but I knew a lot of business people before I went into business, and they were whining about that back then, so it wasn't very popular back then either. And if I try to raise some revenue, are taxes really necessary? We don't know that for sure. I don't know that for sure. Everybody says it is. But personally, I think before you start any kind of tax deal, that you got to take some of the permanent funds. I know that's a very unpopular thing also, but I don't believe you should give money in one hand and take it back with the other. The second suggestion I would have, which is another old unpopular thing, is to move the capital to a closer place where you don't have to spend all the money to fly there, you know, every time there's a session, and have to have double and everything. My suggestion would be move the capital somewhere in the valley, Anchorage, somewhere in the area where the majority of the people could drive to it, maybe even live at home. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan, and I appreciate you bringing up those things that you might see as possible considerations or things that we should explore as we look to deal with the fiscal gap. And I would suggest to any of those of you that are online waiting to testify or here in Juneau waiting to testify, take this as an opportunity. If you really hate the gross receipts tax, which is the feeling that I'm getting, what might be acceptable in if there's any form of new revenues that you would find acceptable. Next, let's go to Fred Rosenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. I too oppose this bill, citing, as so many people have before, that it would result in a severe negative economic impact when you merely purely tax the revenue. I want to point out something specific. I'm representing today the Alaska Restaurant Therapists Association. I am in the restaurant business also. A lot of restaurants, particularly the fast food business and some of the larger restaurants, operate on very tight margins, defining the margins as the net profit after we've paid everything that you would expect plus all of our taxes. It's not unusual for a business to operate between 3 and 7% true net profit. If someone was operating on a 5% net profit, that would mean 20% of the net profit would go to this tax at 1%. If they were operating on 4% pure net, a fourth of their business, or 25% of their net profit, would be paying into this tax. It would be a very inequitable tax and a very inappropriate tax. There are other issues that are really specific to how this tax does or doesn't pass through. When businesses have their income, they pay other costs associated directly with their income. If we raise our prices, which is a very, very difficult thing to do, we will pay more in expenses in other areas. A class that the people overlook is liability tax, or liability insurance, that we pay on gross revenue. And there's a bunch of other expenses that we have that are related to growth. I personally am in the franchise restaurant business. I pay royalties and advertising and marketing fees to the franchisor. I pay those based on the gross revenue, not on any net revenue. So you can see a lot of business would be taxed in a lot of areas that haven't been considered today, and I'm not sure have been considered at all. I do think it's an unfair tax. I don't think it's an appropriate way to tax. It's not invisible to the consumer. It may be invisible at the point they're paying for the goods, but ultimately this would prove to be very inflationary, and the consumer is the one that's going to suffer the most. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Rosenberg. Appreciate your testimony. And then also in Anchorage we have Joe Henry.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joseph Henry. I have been around here a long time, and in government and out of government. And in the late 60s and early 70s, I was I was chair of the Municipal League Legislative Committee. And every town that was a member of that group, the Alaska Municipal League, was against this tax. It was exceedingly bad for all the reasons that, the insightful reasons that have been given here by people in the Mattoo Valley and my colleagues here in Anchorage and so forth. And it leads to a lot of bankruptcy. It not only discourages business, you can just bank on bankruptcies increasing because of this thing. I'd like to say to the sponsor, though, Representative Scalzi, I appreciate your trying to close the fiscal gap, and I appreciate your going on the offensive to try to do that. I do believe, though, that this is the worst vehicle. The only worst thing I've heard about is Mr. Morgan's idea of moving the capital to... But someone asked the question, how many states have a gross receipt tax? And I believe the answer was two or three states. I'd like to ask the other question. How many states have a so-called permanent fund dividend? There, Alaska is unique. And to close the gap, which indeed we must, the receipt of the permanent fund dividend, to me, should be available up to 100% of the receipt to close this gap. And the other possibility I see, which I know my friend Representative Hayes is there, who was a stellar student at UA when I was on the Board of Regents. My years there at the Board of Regents, I'd ask everybody importuning us for something or other whether they would be willing to have a personal income tax to help pay for some of these things, and everyone said they would. And I also asked, would they be willing to reduce or rescind the dividend? And they also said they would, because education is more important than getting free money from the state. So I hope this one doesn't go, Madam Chair, but I appreciate your work and Representative Scalzi's work trying to close the fiscal gap. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Henry. Appreciate your comments. Let's try to get back to Petersburg now. Mr. Flint, are you online?
I'm here.
You were just getting to the interesting part. Cut off. I apologize.
Well, most of what I, as I was saying, most of what I wanted to address has pretty much been covered already. But although I'm not personally involved in the fishing business, one point that comes to mind that I think would affect the fishing industry dramatically is that this economy and the competitiveness of the fishing business right now is vastly different than it was when this tax was in effect previously. And that even the slight possibility that fish products could be have a, any kind of pyramid tax effect before they get to market, I think would be devastating. And repercussions of that, somebody who's this one entitlement and hopes to get a little spin off from that industry. I also think this is just plain, this is a hidden tax. You know, there's no real oversight here. Like, for example, if you're going to have income tax, well then, right in the wallet, and they're going to know, they're going to pay attention to spending their money. But this tax makes the retailer and the processor a lot of issues, which they're not really responsible for. And lastly, just plain from any business before, number one, they pay their suppliers. Number two, pay their overhead is totally ridiculous, and that's about all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Flint. Appreciate it. Let's go to Nancy Berg, also in Petersburg.
Thank you for letting us speak on this. Again, I think a lot of things have been mentioned that we were all going to bring up, and I would agree with everything that's been brought up so far. One thing additionally that I'd like to point out is that in our town with the fishing industry struggling, we've seen small businesses closing every year. And I think one of the reasons that we all live here is the quality of life and the fact that we live in a small community with lots of services. And I don't want to walk through our town and see a ghost town in the retail business. It's very difficult for people to compete with the internet and catalog sales. And I think our quality of life in Petersburg would really suffer if we lose more businesses. I would be more in favor of an income tax, the state income tax, that gave some kind of tax credit to local residents who live and work up here and make the quality of life better, and the people that are going south with their money would also be taxed. Right now, there is no tax involved with those folks, so I appreciate you letting us talk today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berg. And finally, in Petersburg, Ben Phillips.
Hi, my name is Ben, and I'm a new business owner in Petersburg. And quite frankly, I think this kind of scares me. I've been looking at the books for the last 10 years of the business that I took over, and the gross sales are in the $1 million range. So I looked at what the profit was for the business for the last 10 years, and I kind of averaged it and came up with a figure of $30,000 net profit. So I figured in what we pay Uncle Sam after that, and I saw that figure, and then I look at 2% of $1 million, which is $20,000. And I put those together, and my business no longer makes money. So I think this thing stinks. That's all I got to say.
Well, that was a pretty good walkthrough. I appreciate that, Mr. Phillips. Let's go here to Juneau, please. Kathy Hansen, I don't know whether you wish to testify. Okay. Welcome.
My name is Kathy Hansen. I'm here today as an individual. Sometimes some of you guys see me in other wearing different hats. My husband and I own three businesses that we have business licenses for. And under this gross receipts tax bill, all three of those businesses would close. And I'd like to just walk through two of them really quickly. We're commercial fishermen, and we do some dock sales. They're very, very minimal compared to our overall amount of fish that we catch. But we have a business license in order to legally sell those fish across the dock. Under this gross receipts tax, you would tax all of the fish that we had caught that we'd also sold to the major processors. Yet, we're talking under, $500 most years that I do on dock sales. I would no longer do dock sales, definitely, under this kind of scenario. You could not afford to pay on all of your other fishing income at the same time. My second business is a gear supply business for commercial fishermen. The only reason that gear supply business works is two things. I basically charge the same price as the Seattle gear companies. The two additional costs that they have is the shipping, which they get cheaper because we're able to ship a whole bunch at one time rather than individual items, and sales tax. My profit margin is probably under 5% on the majority of that stuff. To pay a gross receipt sales tax on nets that cost a couple thousand dollars, there would be no reason to do it, and it's not a cost that you could pass on to the consumer because they can make the phone call to Seattle and just have it shipped up to them direct. So, you asked for examples on how this would affect businesses. There's two for you. Solutions. I even hate to say it, but it really is coming down to this legislature needs to pass the state income tax. I hate saying it, don't like thinking about it, but it's actually the most reasonable respect to go, and I've been talking to a lot of fishermen that are coming up and saying that same thing. It's what needs to be looked at most seriously right now, and one fisherman I talked to today made the comment, and I think he has a good point, with a state income tax, because we're paying into the government, people are going to be more likely to watch how you are spending that money and actually engage more with the legislature regarding finances. It's not a thought I had thought about before, but I thought he had a pretty valid point.
Well, thank you, Ms. Hansen. Appreciate your testimony, and I appreciate how uncomfortable you are saying that you would support that, and I think most of us around here would definitely concur. It's very difficult, but I think we're all recognizing that the reason we're talking about these very difficult subjects is because the time has come, and many of us feel that time came a while ago and we need to move on it. Representative Meyer, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and not to make you feel more uncomfortable, but you prefer the state income tax over the permanent dividend and capping the dividend at a certain level?
I haven't given much thought to the permanent fund dividend. I like the state income tax because there is a lot of businesses that enact business in the state of Alaska that actually take place, you know, commercial fishing is a perfect example, charter businesses, you know, an awful lot of stuff goes home, they use our services. It seems a fair tax. Permanent fund, I don't really have any deals, but another thought that I've thought for years, it won't raise the state a lot of money, but maybe should be looked at, is rather than change your business license to a sales tax, a $25 business license is incredibly cheap.
Mm-hmm.
A $50, $100, you know, even a small business can still survive that. But the other thing I'd like to make a comment on is I know this fiscal situation is really difficult for you guys to work on, and it needs to be done in an overall package, which makes it even harder, because if you piecemeal away these little taxes like this, it's really hard for a business person to even understand. Well, you maybe have this tax coming at you and maybe this tax and this tax, and you can't get a handle on it, and so it becomes harder to talk about. You guys are struggling with it too. You know, how do you put all the pieces together, and then how does it affect everything? I don't know. I'm just up here enough that I figured I needed to step in and say something.
Well, I appreciate it. Great deal. Thank you. Thias Schaub. And the committee members should have the NFIB ballot results. Should be on your table here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Thias Schaub. I'm the lobbyist for the National Federation of Independent Business. And I admit that I was the one that sent the fax alert out last Thursday.
You did good work.
I have been lobbying for NFIB for a number of years, and I have sent out fax alerts before. I have never received a response the way we have all received in response to this legislation. I also want to point out that in that fax alert, your fax numbers were on there. The only phone number that was on that fax alert was mine. So I got to speak to all these people directly. And it actually was very educational for me, too. I think a lot of people, when they first look at this bill, they think 2% gross, like the example earlier, you know, you add the 2% onto the product. But as was mentioned by the Department of Revenue, the pyramiding effect really adds on to your rent. I've heard from property managers who, you know, the owners of the building have to pay on their gross income. The property manager has to pay on his gross income. He collected it. You know, those are two different businesses. So on that rent alone, then you have to increase your rents to the business. Small businesses oftentimes don't have in-house bookkeepers. They hire a bookkeeping service, so they're going to pay a little more there. They hire a janitorial service. You start adding all this little 2% more on all those things, and it adds up to a much higher expense in your cost of doing business, and it, you know, takes off of your profit. Not all businesses, some businesses can add on the extra, others can't. Like if you're in a market situation where it's so competitive that you can't, you're competing against internet sales, and those types of things have been already mentioned. I did include the NFIB statement of opposition. I also wanted to point out the NFIB ballot results, which this year were focused on the balancing the budget and some of the issues that are before the legislature in terms of taxation. if you look at the results, the strongest response was in opposition to a gross receipts tax. And although NFIB members collectively didn't like any of them, there wasn't a 50% majority that really voted in favor of any of them, as I spoke to the members as they called me in this past week, I asked them what would they think could be a solution rather than a gross receipts tax. And I would say about half of them mentioned income tax and about half of them mentioned earnings of the permanent fund. Sales tax is actually less popular. So as an association in their voting, it's not surprising that when you ask people to vote, they're usually going to say no to taxes. But when asked to, you know, help solve a problem, they're going to give you some examples of what might work. And as a lobbyist for NFIB, I can't be out advocating for that, but I can tell you that that's individually their responses have been a variety of things, including permanent fund and income tax. And many of the other things I was going to mention have already been said, and so I will close with that unless anybody has any questions.
Guys, on your survey, how many survey responses did you get back? Just general numbers.
There is, I think the requirement is a 10% requirement, so it goes out to 2,500 members, so it's probably 250. They don't come back to me. They come back to NFIB headquarters, and they give me the results. I don't give them myself.
Thank you. And we think, I do appreciate you bringing this to the attention of so many all across the state, and it's indicative of the feedback that we're getting here in committee. But we will send you the bills for the broken fax machines.
Just doing my job.
Thank you. Pam LaBelle.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pam Ball, and I'm president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. And as I did comment last year when the one hearing we had, that we really disliked the bill, and that was before I'd had the opportunity to talk to some of my members. I just knew they would dislike it. And that is true, and for basically the same reasons you've already heard here today. It puts Alaska business at a disadvantage. So much of the work that this legislation has tried to do over the past few years, creating business incentives to have business locate and do business in Alaska, build their businesses, and those things, it works against them. And we also think that the fact that this is a tax before profits, that with the slim profit margin that so many businesses do operate on, I know there's a misconception out there, I think, in the public that, you know, a business has a larger percentage of profit that it does, but when you consider all of the costs of doing business, it is so often a very small percentage, and this really puts businesses on the brink of making no money at all. And so we think it would be a very chilling effect on business. And of all the taxes that have been mentioned, this is the one that is in the greatest disfavor.
That's what we're seeing.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Thank you.
And then last here in Juneau, we have Donna Isaac.
First of all, thank you for the alert. many of you, I'm sure, if not all of you, received a fax from me. I was one of the many that you got. My husband and I have been in the heating oil business in Juneau since 1966, so we were affected by the gross receipt tax back then. And we really had to struggle to stay in business. Our predecessor only had about 200 customers, and so our profit margin back then, our 400-gallon price of fuel was 18 cents a gallon. Of course, after the fuel crisis in 73, that really spiked up. In my memo to all of you, I mentioned the fact that after this tax was repealed, we were able to be supportive of many, many more community activities, as well as I mentioned just a few, adult softballs, volleyball, children's little league teams, and also many nonprofit organizations we contributed to. We thought this is any of our wealth that we were making, we wanted to put some back in the community. And many high school activities, the drill team, the wrestling team. And as I said in my memo, or my facts to all of you, that could easily come to a screeching halt if we had to use, and that's what we would use for to pay the gross income tax. Ours would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $85,000 to $100,000 annually. That's a big chunk, you know, and a lot of that money is going in back into the community. The only other alternative would be to raise the price of oil per gallon, because we are in the retail business. And I can tell you right now, we have had a colder winter this year than we did last, but many more of our customers had to resort to using the state energy assistance program. So that money is coming right back out of the state when we raise our prices, because they just, some of them just can't afford. And we have seen a big increase, and I think it's primarily partly due to the colder winter, but I think that it's just the price of fuel is so high. Now, you know, as you all know, the market, it goes up and down, and it's on its way back up because the OPEC nations have said that they're going to cut production. And the minute they do that, then the big oil companies start up. So last year, it is about 20 cents a gallon less than last year, but yet still there's customers that are having to use the state energy assistance program's money. So it's coming right back out. And that's essentially, we wouldn't want to stop after being in business 36 years to stop doing these community things. We would rather, you know, all of our customers are just going to have to pay for this. And so I really, really oppose this. My daughter-in-law had just started her own business. She was a travel agent for 11 years for her aunt. And she did just a whopping business from her home. Everybody likes her so much. She did over $1.5 million this year. And she's really trying. This is her first year. And she said that will do it for her. She'll be out. I'm trying to go out of business. And so I just think it's going to be irreparable damage to many, many businesses that have just, you know, we were fortunate enough. I was so tight with every little penny when we started out after we bought our business. We started with $600 in savings with a big, you know, payment to get the business. So we really struggled, and we didn't do anything but to make sure we had money. I always swore we wouldn't borrow to pay this tax, and we probably wouldn't have to now, but the consumer's going to pay it, and that's all there is to it. So I urge you to let it die and don't get out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Eisen. Just for the committee's information, we have probably, I don't know, looks like maybe 15 more names here. I was going to try to hop around, but we still have two more here in Juneau, so we'll finish up here in Juneau. Rick Withrow.
My name is Rick Withrow, and I'm here to testify against House Bill 258. And most of what I wanted to say has already been said. It seems to me like a lot of people are overlooking the permanent fund, and a lot of talk about income tax. The way I see it is I could easily see the permanent fund being what your income tax is. So why have an income tax and then get a permanent fund that's exactly the same amount or less? That's ridiculous. I would rather forfeit my permanent fund than pay any tax. This is probably the richest state in the union, $30 billion in the bank or more. And people want to pay income tax or any tax? That's ridiculous. I don't believe in handing the permanent fund over to the state because I know how quickly it could be spent. You guys could spend it in a day. But I could see it being used to pay for times like this. That's what it was set up for times like this. The only people that are going to be hurt by using the permanent fund are people who don't work or people who rely on that check all by itself. I work. I don't need the check. And I don't need the tax. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony.
Okay. Madam Chair, could I ask
yes.
the gentleman...
Representative Cott.
What... Sir?
Rick.
Yep. Rick? Come on back up here. I just wanted to ask you a question, and I completely agree with everything you said. I just wanted to ask you, what is your occupation?
I'm a professional mariner, general laborer.
Okay.
Thank lobbyist.
Lobbyist?
There you go.
Could I just add one thing to mine, too? I know Rick, and I did, you know, very well that we would much prefer you taking our permanent fund rather than a tax. I mean, that's just much more paperwork for individuals. So thank you for letting me
You
out.
Bet. And now let's go to Bernie Smith.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Bernie Smith. I'm representing Chugiak and Eagle River Chamber of Commerce. I was called when I was going to be down here with the State Chamber of Commerce from my chamber to oppose House Bill 258. Eagle River and Chugiak basically have just small businesses. We're not a large community, even though we're part of a municipality, but our own chamber there are made up of very small businesses. In fact, you have one of them sitting at the table here. If this bill goes through, we have been told by some of our businesses that they will absolutely just go under. They'll go into bankruptcy, and it's not fair. This is not a good bill for taxes. Because I don't have the ability from my chamber to comment on other taxes, I'll leave that alone. But personally, I like a lot of other different ones than we have here. So just as you have been told over in all your faxes that you have, this is a bill that would harm the key development of our society, which is small businesses. So please let this one die. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, not from your chamber or your members, but from yourself, if you were sitting where Pete is right now, what would you think would be some of the options that we could use? I'm sure as a business person and looking at
actually,
how the state's
I
been
work
going,
for the state, so I'm in a little more familiar situation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I haven't been in the private industry all my life, except for the last 2 years. So I couldn't answer that as a private business owner, because I'm not in the private business. As an individual, I personally think that the permanent fund is a opportunity to be used, because that's what it was meant to be when it was set up, in my opinion. Although the only problem with the permanent fund, which y'all have discussed at length, is that it hurts the people that depend on it, that have no other income, but it also doesn't capture the people that come into our state that use our facilities, use our services, and leave without paying. That is something that I don't know how you're going to address. But that's the reason we pay you the big bucks.
Oh my, pay me
Thanks
more.
Thank you.
You got the note.
Yeah. All right, let's go off-site to Susan Springer.
Good afternoon, Representative Murkowski and members of the committee. My name is Susan Springer, and I'm speaking to you from Soldovia, where I live and own a small retail business. I wish to voice my opposition to House Bill 258. Many of my comments have already been covered by far by more compelling testimony than I had prepared. I would add, though, that in this time of a softer national economy and reluctance of people to travel to Alaska, the last thing we small rural businesses need is another increase in the cost of doing business and another thing to make us less competitive. We will have enough challenges in the next few years just to keep our noses above the waterline. I am well aware of the work of the Fiscal Policy Caucus in trying to craft a long-range fiscal plan for Alaska. While I support that effort, I don't support this bill, which to me represents a piecemeal approach to solving the state's budget problem. Craft instead, please, a well-thought-out and comprehensive plan that includes budget cuts as well as taxes. Present that to the public instead of debating bills like this, which don't address the larger issue. Lest I sound like yet another constituent who signs on to testify and ends up complaining without offering a willingness to understand the greater problem or be part of the solution, let me offer this. I am only one voice, but I can speak in support of Representative Moses and Mulder's bill to cap permanent fund dividends in order to create a new and alternate source of funding community services. I supported Governor Hickel's community permanent fund concept when I first heard about it at an AML convention a few years ago. Representative Moses and Mulder's plan strikes me as being in keeping with that concept. Please give it your consideration when it comes before you and make it and not bills like this the centerpiece of your long-range fiscal plan. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd like to wish a very happy 50th birthday to Representative Scalzi. I was thinking about sending you something in Kevlar, but it sounds like you're covered there, so gift certificate for a fire extinguisher instead.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Mrs. Springer. And I will just note that should this bill get elevated to the next committee of referral, it would be one of those it would be one of those that would be considered as part of a bigger plan, I suppose. But I certainly don't think it was the sponsor's intent that this would just be out there all by itself.
Better shoot this whale right now.
Yes.
Let's next go to Casey McDowell, also off-site.
Hello, this is Casey McDowell. I was just listening in for my members. I didn't plan on testifying, but I'm the executive director for the Alaska Cabaret Restaurant, Hotel Restaurant Retailers Association. I think all has been said. I have nothing much more to add to it.
Thank you, Casey. Thanks for listening in. And we have in Eagle River a whole host of folks.
Eagle River?
Eagle River. Are you paying attention there? We've got Representative Kott's attention now. Good. Let's go to Martha Rogers first.
Hi. I own a bed and breakfast called Peters Creek Inn in Chugiak, right? Associated with Eagle River, and this House Bill 258 would put us out of business. We've operated our bed and breakfast for 6 years now. We're going into our seventh season, and we're having hard enough time competing with all the new hotel chains that are coming into the city. And all of our profits, which right now are very small, are going back into making our business a better place for people to come to. And with the tourist industry already being small and cut back the way it is, this bill will put us out of business. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Rogers. Myrna Brooks.
Chairman Murkowski, Myrna Brooks had to leave, as did Ms. Johnson. They had to get back to their businesses. I believe they'll be sending in a letter opposing the bill. And also, Jim Hankey, our local vet, also had to leave because he had appointments.
Okay. I'm sorry. We have a lot of folks still here to testify, although it sounds like you still have a fair number there in Eagle River. Is that right?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
The majority of the people that showed up are here.
All right. Then let's try Dixie Waddell.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Dixie Waddell. I have a small business in Chugiak that hires just a few people, but we feel like we're important to the community, and I see that this would be something that would be disastrous to us. I was in business under the old business tax with a business in Anchorage. I feel that the fact that we closed that business barely with a toehold on any kind of amount of any financial startup, anything else, was only because we got out before this got us. I certainly would not, do not support this. I also wondered if any consideration is ever given to how many times an item that goes into a store is taxed, from the wholesaler to the distributors and the dealers and anyone else in between, say the person that delivers it right on down to the store, which at that point is adding its 2 cents tax to its cost, not to the consumer. Because it's been pointed out that would not work. I wondered if there was any consideration being given to that at all. And frankly, I just see that small business would find it even more and more difficult to compete with larger business. And in the long run, it would be our downfall. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony, and thanks for your patience in waiting. John Nauman or Newman?
John Nauman. I own and operate the horse-drawn carriage company. We run the carriages downtown Anchorage. I'm opposed to this House bill. Just from an operational viewpoint, it would be a nightmare trying to collect additional fees to cover the additional taxes. We tried, our costs have been going up regularly. We've been in operation about 20 years now. In a couple of years, we did try raising our rate of steering for Rondi, for instance. But we found that it was much better to keep the rates down. When we raised them, our people riding with us, actually, the number of people went down. So we kept it low, and that makes it possible for us not just to cater to the wealthy people, but to the run-of-the-mill single families that can't afford it. I think the best thing from my viewpoint right now is realizing the state has to do something. Some income tax would probably be the way to go, but I don't like that either. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I do appreciate your comments. Did you have a comment, Mr. Representative Cott?
John, yes, Madam Chair. John, I appreciate you coming forward today. What about utilization of the permanent dividend versus an income tax?
I'm torn there. I think Alaskans are very fortunate that we have it. I guess I would like to see some percentage of that to be given, be taken out for the state, and the rest come to the people who are getting the check. I think all of us agree that dividend check is a real boost to the entire state. Just a real boost. You can tell it even in my business when the checks come out, the writability goes up. I would hate to see that go away for that reason. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman. Susie Gorski.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of Labor and Congress. I am the Executive Director for the Chugiak Eagle River Chamber, and I know you've already heard from Bernie, but I guess you get to hear from me, too. Our phones have been ringing off the hook for about the last 3 days, and I promise you there was not one call in the affirmative for this particular piece of legislation. I first want you to know that we all empathize with what you're trying to do. I mean, people have been talking and they're seriously concerned. But as a business organization, you know, we believe first and foremost that the economic viability of the private sector has gotten disturbed. Probably the most important point here is that industry and commerce provides the backbone upon which all government funding rests. And so we have to oppose HB 258. Our businesses will be facing additional taxes that could easily cost jobs and affect their stability.
I find this particularly egregious in tough times when expenses exceed revenues, and I mean, it disproportionately affects small business, and it's going to send our consumers outside for goods and services. So we're going to urge you to look for other alternatives. I don't have an answer for you as to what that might be. We, as an organization, if it's possible to develop a series of scenarios, would be glad to pick A, B, and C, you know, whichever looks the best, and hash it over and be a, you know, kind of a work group on that. I know you need input and feedback. This is not the answer, but certainly a combination of some of the other types of revenue alternatives that have been presented, certainly we can do it. But that's all I have. Thank you for your time, for letting us testify.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your offer of assistance there as well. Next, let's go to Burl Rogers.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm in the group that used to deal with the old tax, and it was one unfortunate year that I had. Things didn't go quite right, and my business suffered about a $7,000 or $8,000 loss, and I still got to pony up about $500 or $600, which I really didn't have. Now I am engaged in a aircraft manufacturing facility that I've taken on the type certificate for an aircraft that's been out of production for about 4 years, and I've started to manufacture the parts again. Needless to say, anybody that knows anything about aircraft knows that the costs are absolutely horrendous. Anything that I manufacture at this point goes right back into buying more materials, buying more engineering, and buying more equipment to do production. We've been doing this now for just about the past 20 or 21 months, yet ever to turn a profit. And this would be the straw that breaks the camel's back. There is no way that I would even consider taking what I have invested so far and pushing it to the point where I'd just be working for the state to give them a tax that I cannot afford to pay. If you're looking for some suggestions, if you think 2% isn't very much, we could drop the legislators per diem by 2% and then start dropping all the state employees paid by 2%, starting with the executive branch, and then maybe cap the dividend. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. I think you've got some volunteers here for the drop in the per diem. Is that?
Kevin, we're just adding up 2% of nothing is still nothing.
Let's go to Deborah Looper. And Deborah, I understand that you were instrumental in getting a lot of the folks in Eagle River out. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I offered our conference room because I knew there was a great interest in this bill, and I'm pleased that so many people were able to take time away from their businesses to come and testify. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Director of Business Development for Equipment Incorporated, a position I've held for about the last year. And it is inherent in my job to be concerned about economic development in our community when I'm going about working on business development for the Native Village Corporation I work for. I believe that this bill would put such a damper on Alaska business that it could very well impede future economic growth anywhere in the near future for our community. I think that while it is wise to bring up a discussion on this topic, it scares me that this bill was introduced and could conceivably gain a life of its own and pass the legislature, even if the sponsor really had no intent of that happening. I just want to point out that most of the work that Equipment Incorporated does is in the land development side, most specifically in developing subdivisions, etc. So I'm fairly familiar with the challenges that are put before the home builders. While Equipment would pay a significant amount of tax, the home builders would also pay a great deal of tax because most homes are built using a large degree of, or a large number of subcontractors. So that 2% tax would be added onto that house many, many times. If you look at the statistics, approximately 60% of those who live in Anchorage cannot afford to buy a home. that was when home prices were significantly less than they are now. And that would shove more people into the rent rolls. And of course, this tax affects rent as well. So those who were forced into the rent rolls would have to pay more on their rent. Finally, I think that this would be require onerous record keeping on the part of the business. Not only would it require the extra bookkeeping, but it most likely, just to be able to calculate this on every transaction, you would have to purchase software specifically catering to this sort of tax, which increases the cost to the business significantly. Not only are they going to see a decrease on their bottom line, but their expenses will go up as well. In terms of suggestions, I very much appreciate the fact that there is a move on to require the department to prioritize their spending. I think that is a wise move. It makes absolute common sense, and it will give you the tools necessary to make whatever cuts that are necessary to bring our state spending in line, and I appreciate very much the efforts that are ongoing in that department.
Thank you, Ms. Looper. Really appreciate your testimony, and again, in providing a place for everyone to gather and encouraging them to come out today. Deborah Lewis.
Yes, my name is Deborah Lewis, and I'm a realtor here in the Eagle River area. Pretty much everything that has been said, I'm in total agreement with. I feel mostly that with the economies across our nation right now, as fragile as they are, that our legislature would risk putting our economy in a situation where we could spiral down while we sit on our pot of gold. I think some of the money from the permanent fund should be looked at, and absolutely some budget cuts I have to add today.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Mm-hmm. And we have Al Romaszewski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Al Romaszewski.
Okay, I was close. Kind of.
And I'm a real estate broker in Eagle River. And again, just like most everybody said, everything that can be said has been said.
Yeah, I'm scared, man.
But my real concern is this House Bill 258 is very regressive. It not only devastates the startup businesses, but all businesses. I would venture to say that in Alaska, most if not all businesses are small mom and pops. And most of them, or a lot of them, are in business just by the string of, by the skin of their teeth, basically. And the reason they're doing it is because they're proud of their business, they're supporting themselves, and they're not on a public dole. I think this bill, if it's allowed to go through, will drive the nail into the coffin and kill these businesses, and we'll have more people on the public dole looking for more dollars, and that's not going to help our state economy. I don't have a real answer for you, but I know it's a real problem, and I applaud you people for trying to correct the problem. Not only trying, it's going to have to be done, and I know you got a tough job. But I would suggest, again, maybe not one thing or two things, but a variety of items. Maybe some budget cuts, reduction in government, maybe a small income tax, or some kind of an income tax to capture some of the money that's leaving our state going down to the lower 48. Maybe a sales tax for that same reason, to capture some money from the people that come up here and use our facilities. And maybe some adjustment to the permanent fund if need be. But I would say a combination of some of those other taxes and budget cuts, and et cetera, rather than drive a nail into the coffin and killing a lot of these small businesses. Somebody mentioned that they would hope that this bill is left to die. Well, I don't think we can afford to leave it to die. I think we need to sink it before it sinks our economy. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the testimony. Is there anyone else there in Eagle River who has not had a chance to speak?
I believe I'm the last person.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate not only those of you in Eagle River, but those that have called in to testify, and from all these locations around the state, you can tell that these are all small businessmen. Looking at the list here in Eagle River, there's just a little bit of everything, but folks that are usually out keeping their businesses open have taken the time to come out today to testify on this, and I truly appreciate the time. Is there anyone here in Juneau who wishes to testify at this point? Anyone still online remaining that wishes to testify? Okay, thank you. That's it for the public testimony, then. We will close the public testimony on this. When we first brought this up today,